Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 15th, 2005. Today's session is entitled Singleness of Purpose and Relationships, Matthew 6:19 through 7:12, presented by John Leonard, session number LEJ 2005-04. Let's listen in.
I've written a book called Stories from the Mount. And it's the Sermon on the Mount illustrated with stories. And so we've gone through chapter 5, and we've gone through halfway through chapter 6. So today we're going to do chapter 6, part of it, and then part of chapter 7. It's actually two chapters in the book. So I'll read a little bit of the scripture, and then I tell stories to try to illustrate what it's about. Does that make sense?
Sounds good.
Okay. So the first part today is called Singleness of Purpose. And it starts off with what's called true treasure. So let me read from Scripture. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. And I'd like you to, before we try this, is just to stop for a minute and think about what is the most important thing in your life? What is the most important thing in your life? Not an easy question. Do you have an answer? I'm not going to ask you.
Exactly.
Oh, you already
that
said
we
it.
Have each other. Yes.
Oh, okay. And then the next question would be, did you arrive at your answer through your head or through your heart or through both? And that's for you to answer. So where your treasure is, there your heart will be. First story that illustrates this, and it's really a story about a woman who's asked for the wrong treasure. Okay. There was a woman whose husband had died, and she had a little boy named Victor. And Victor had not been baptized yet. And before the baptism came, a wish giver came by and said, now before your son is baptized, I want you to pick out what you want for him. You can ask for anything in the world. What do you want for him? So she thought and she thought and she thought. And a couple days before the baptism, she saw the wish giver again. And so she went to the wish giver and she said, what I want for my son is for him always to be loved. Granted, said the wish giver. So the little boy was baptized, and as he grew up, people just loved him. Not only loved him, they spoiled him. And he got older and older and older, and people kept taking care of him, and women just sort of fondled him, and he used women, and it just kept going on and on and on like this, where he was totally loved and didn't have to work for a living. And after a while, he got sick of this. And he decided that what he was going to do was to go home, pour a great big glass of whiskey, take a whole slew of sleeping pills, and kill himself. So he got the whiskey in the glass, and he had the pills out, and he was all ready to do it when there was a knock on the door. And he thought, should I go to the door or shouldn't I? And he thought, oh, well, I'll go to the door. Went to the door, and there was this old guy there. And the old guy said, I'm a wish giver, and I'm here to grant any wish you want. And he recalled his mom talking to the wish giver years and years and years ago. I mean, her mom talking about it. And he thought, well, maybe there is a way out. So he said, okay, my wish is that I will learn how to love. Granted, said the wish giver. And so all of a sudden, the people around him didn't fondle him all the time, and he lost all his friends, and he found out that once he lost all his friends and he wasn't taken care of by his friends, it was time that he had to do something in order to make it a living. And he kind of just lost his whole world here. So he decided, well, I got to find a job. He found a job as a janitor in an elementary school. And he worked in the elementary school, and he really, really liked the kids. And he came to love the kids. And then he met a woman, and he fell in love with this woman. And all of a sudden, his whole life changed around. He had to work for a living, but he was happy. He loved, and his wife loved him, but he wasn't fondled on by all these people. As I said at the beginning, the mom asked for the wrong treasure. There's another story about that a treasure that's never shared ceases to be a treasure. There was a man who had a lot of money. He had three sons. And, excuse me, one of the sons decided that he would work on olive trees. So he worked on olive trees, and this olive orchard was just really, really prosperous. And another son, he decided that he would start raising sheep, and so he did, and became very, very prosperous, and they were still all at home. And the third son decided that what he really wanted to do was to play music, and so he started playing music, and he was really, really good. Well, as time went on, the father had to go away, and the three sons were left at home. And if they're left at home, all of a sudden, it became a very, 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 very cold winter, and the people all around were freezing to death. And so the son who was in charge of the olive trees cut down the olive trees so people could make fires to heat themselves. And the people managed to get through the time because they had the olive trees and it kept them warm. And then after this cold, cold period of time, there came to be a famine. And so the son who had the sheep started killing the sheep and giving the food to other people to help them live. Well, eventually, the people moved away because it was so terrible in that area. And the father came home. And he said to the first son, well, what happened? And he said, well, the people were freezing, and so I cut down the trees to have them warm. And he says, that's good. That's good. And he said to the second son, and what did you do? He said, well, people were starving, so I had to kill all the sheep so that they could get something to eat. He says, that's good. That's good. And he said to the third son, and what did you do? Oh, Dad, I didn't do anything. I was waiting for you to come home so that I could play the fiddle for you. And so he said, okay, play the fiddle. And the son got up, and he totally forgotten how to play the fiddle, and he couldn't do anything. First two sons used their treasure, the last son did not, and in not using it, lost it. There's also a very dinky, dinky, dinky story about a Native American, very old Native American, and he was a chief, and he had a grandson, and he loved his grandson, and he said to his grandson, you know, in your heart, there are two wolves, and the one wolf feeds on hatred and bigotry and violence. And the other wolf feeds on love and tolerance and peace. So the little boy thought about this for a while. Then he went out and he says, "Grandpa, which one of those wolves is going to take control of my life?" And the grandpa said, "Whichever one you feed. Whichever one you feed." Next part, the sound I. If I can find the right page. Okay, the eye is the lamp of the body. So, if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? You know, if we talked about this in terms of Eastern terms, Eastern thinking, we'd be talking about enlightenment. And one of my favorite authors is a Jesuit priest, I think he's no longer alive, who's from India, Tony DeMello. And Tony DeMello has a quote that goes, "The enlightened know that to make the world a painless place, you need to change your heart, not the world." Let me repeat that. In order to make the world a better place, a painless place, you need to change your heart and not the world. Part of the problem with having a sound eye is that we don't see things. And it seems to me that one of the most important things about prayer is seeing. I said this the other day when I talked about prayer is seeing. But there's a Jewish story about a rabbi from Krakow. And he had this vision that he would find a treasure if he went to Prague. So he set off on the journey by foot, long journey by foot. And they finally made it to Prague. And as he came to Prague, he found that there were bridges coming into this town, and there were guards on the bridges. And as he came into Prague, he saw one of the guards at the bridges, and the guard says, "Well, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, I had a vision that there was a treasure here. And so I've come to find the treasure." And the guard, "That is stupid," he said. "You know, I had a vision too. And the vision I had was that there was some rabbi in Krakow who had a house in which there was a treasure. And I thought to myself, I'll go to Krakow and there'll be all these rabbis and I'd have to go through every different house. So I forgot it." All of a sudden, the rabbi's eyes opened up. He returned home. He looked in the house. He looked underneath the wood in the house, and there he found a treasure. We just need to know how to look. The next section is on, this is going quickly here, on the two masters. "No one can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one or love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." The story I have here isn't maybe the best in the world, but I find it interesting. There was a very, very rich man who had enormous territory. And he loved to get on his horse and ride around the territory and see all the land he owned and realize how rich he was and how good things were, and he just thought, this is just marvelous. I have all this territory. And he came upon a man who was noted for being holy, but was really, really, really poor. And the guy that was poor was kind of sitting by the side of the road, and he was eating a loaf of bread, and it was the type of loaf of bread that the rich man never would have even touched. It just looked like, my gosh, it looked like it's been through the sewer. And he was eating this and eating this. And the poor rich man thought, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And then the poor guy, who was very holy, said to the rich man, I just had a vision. And the rich man said, oh, you did? What was your vision? My vision was that the richest man in this whole domain is going to die. Well, it panicked, obviously, the rich man. So he said, well, thank you for your vision. And he got on his horse and he immediately went back to his doctor. And he had the doctor examine him and look at him and make sure that everything was all right. And then as he was finished the exam, the doctor said, there's nothing wrong with you. You don't have to worry about dying right now. And as the rich man was just about to leave the doctor's office, a man came in and said to the doctor, Doctor, do you remember that poor old holy man? The doctor said, yeah. The man said, he just died. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Next part of this chapter, do not worry. Therefore I tell you, do not worry. Oh, this is a long part. About your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your lifespan? And why do you worry about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow, and so forth, and so forth, and so forth. So it ends up, so do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring worries of its own. Today's trouble is enough trouble for today. God will provide for you. That's what I picked up out of the story. A true story. All my stories are true. Some are historically true. There was a man in Hungary during the communist occupation in 1956, occupation by the Russians. And he was opposed to communism. But he was not religious at all. Not at all. And a friend came up to him, the man's name was Janos. A friend came up to him and said, Janos, you're on the list. And being on the list meant that he was ready to be arrested and maybe even executed. So his friend, who was the most generous person that you can think of, says, here, take this and get out of the country. And he says, take my motorcycle. And then he pulled out a Red Cross armband. Take the Red Cross armband. And Janos took it and put it around his arm. Here's a gas card. Gave him a gas card. And then he says, and here's a pistol in case you need it. So he took the pistol. And then, right before he left, his friend said, Janos, I know you're not religious, but I want you to have this. And he took off the cross that he was wearing around his neck and he gave it to Janos. Janos said, thank you. Took the cross, card, stuck it in his pocket, put his pistol in the other pocket, and he headed off for the Austrian border. He traveled and he traveled and he traveled, and he realized he needed to get gas, and he came into this little place, and there was a gas station there. So he had him fill up the motorcycle with gas. The guy filled up the motorcycle with gas. Then Jano said, "Okay, now let me give you my gas card." And as he pulled out the gas card, the cross was wrapped around the gas card. And the man who was at the attendant at the gas station said, "You don't have to pay. Just keep going. The gas is on me." Janos couldn't figure out what this was all about, but he put the gas card and the cross back in his pocket, and he took off again. Well, then he went on and went on and went on and went on and went on, and he was heading for the Austrian border, and he met some Russians, the guards. And he says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "I'm going to help some people down by the border. See my Red Cross badge?" And so they said, "Okay, but if you're telling a lie, you'll be caught and you'll be executed." So Janos pulled on. And he kept going and going and going. And then he was really, really tired. And he came into a village and he saw kind of light flowing from this one building. And he found out it was a Catholic church. And so the church was open, and he went into the church, and he kind of sat down, and then he thought, "Well, since I'm in a church, maybe I should pray," but he couldn't remember any of the prayers that he had been taught as a kid. And so he said, "Forget it, I'm not going to pray. I don't know what to do." And then he kind of looked around the church, and it was Christmas time, and there was a creche there, a nativity scene. Now, aside here, nothing to do with the story, I have over 100 nativity scenes in our house. So we have a Christmas party every year and tell people to come and count the nativity scenes. And I just came back from Zambia about 10 days ago, and I picked up an African nativity scene in Zambia. My wife is saying, "No more, no more." But he found this nativity scene, and he thought of Christmas in the past, which wasn't celebrated now because the Russians wouldn't allow it to be celebrated. And he kind of laid down in front of the nativity set, and he went to sleep. Well, he got up in the next morning, and he decided, "I'm going to need more gas." And, well, not more gas, this time directions. So he went to a gas station. And he said to the man at the gas station, "Now, I will give you the motorcycle if you'll give me directions on how to get across the Austrian border." And so the man said, "Well, it's this way, and you want to watch out for Russian guards because they're there all the time. And if you hear a lot of dogs barking, then you're close to the border. But if you hear one dog barking, that's a dog that's probably with the Russian guards. So beware." So he headed off walking, and all of a sudden he was stopped by two Russian guards. And he said, "What are you doing?" He pointed at the thing, they pulled it off his shoulder, and he says, "The Red Cross doesn't do anything. What are you doing? You're trying to escape, aren't you?" He didn't say anything. So the guard searched his pockets, found the pistol, threw the pistol away, found the cross, found the gas card, said, "We know what you're doing." So one guard said to the other, "Take this man and put him in prison." And the other guard went off to tell people what had happened. So as they were walking still towards the border, and Janos wondered about why they were walking towards the border, the Russian guard, who had seen the cross, said, "Do you know Silent Night?" And Janos said, "Yes, I know Silent Night." And so, in their different languages, they sang Silent Night together. And then the Russian guard said, "Take the cross with you." put it on, and when I shoot into the air, you just cross the border, and the shots will mean that you did something with me and I was trying to kill you. So the guard shot in the air, and Janos went across the border to liberty, to safety, to freedom, and to the ability, now that he had been saved because of the cross, to actually learn the meaning of the cross. And Janos says later on that every Christmas he thinks of that Russian guard, how the Russian who was raised religiously and then made an army person by the communists, and he wonders what happened to him, and can he ever pray, and can he ever sing Silent Night? And in this story, the cross is a perfect symbol for divine providence. There's another story, an old Jewish story, that shows how God provides. There was this Jewish lady, very poor, very poor. But she used to bake 3 loaves of bread every day. And then she would give 2 of those loaves to poor people. And she would take the 3rd loaf and eat it for herself. And that was great. Well, one day, she made 3 loaves of bread. And all of a sudden, that one person came and said, "Can you give me a loaf of bread?" And she said, "Sure." And she gave the loaf of bread away. Another person came and she said, "Can you give me a loaf of bread?" He says, "Certainly I can give you a loaf of bread." And she gave it away. Another person came and said, "Can you give me a loaf of bread?" And she said, of course I can give you a loaf of bread. And she gave it away, and she had no loaves of bread. But she says, "I still have flour." Well, the flour had to be ground. So she put the flour into a bag, and she went off to get the flour ground. And she had the flour ground, and she was heading back to bake the loaves of bread again. And she had the flour, this reminds me of an African, she had the flour on her head. In Africa, women oftentimes carry things on their head. And she was walking along, and all of a sudden, a huge wind came up and blew the flour away. And she couldn't find it, it just disappeared. And she thought, "Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? The flour's gone, and I'm hungry." Well, this is an ancient story, and so she went to one of the wisest people, the fact that one of the wisest people ever, King Solomon. And she told Solomon about how she was walking home with the flour and how the flour was blown off her head. And Solomon said, "If it was blown off your head, then God had something to do with that." Well, as she was talking to Solomon and Solomon was trying to figure out what to do, a number of fishermen came in and they said, "King, King, we were out fishing. We made a huge catch. And then we got this hole in our boat and we started sinking and we prayed and we prayed and we said, please God, do something. And all of a sudden the hole was plugged and we got in. And so since we got in and were saved, we decided we would give money to you." And they gave him 7,000 gold coins. So Solomon said, "Well, would you go back and find out what plugged the hole?" So, okay, they went back and they brought back this muddy old thing here, and it was a bag. And Solomon looked at the bag and he showed the bag to the woman and he said, "Do you recognize this bag?" And she said, "That was my bag of flour." And so Solomon said, "If that was your bag of flour, then you're the one that saved the boat. You get the 7,000 golden coins." And so she didn't have to worry after that about how she was going to live and what she was going to do, but she still baked 3 loaves of bread a day and gave the loaves to the poor. The next part of this section that is on relationships, I want to read. I can read it in here, excuse me for being so slow. Okay. Relationship with your brothers and sisters. Do not judge so that you may not be judged. For with the judgment you make, you will be judged. And the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, "Let me take the speck out of your eye," while the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. This section I take down as a relationship with your brothers and sisters. And it's so clear there how quick we are to judge others and how slow we are to judge ourselves or to even see ourselves as we are. And how eager we are to point out mistakes of other people. Some people, none in this room do that, but some people do that. I love this story. It's a short story, but there was a businessman who came into town and had to spend the night, and he found this little hotel called Mary's Hotel. And so he spent the night, and he went into the hotel and just loved it. And so he started talking to the owner, and he says, "You know, how's business?" She says, "No one comes in. No one even gets to see how nice the hotel is." And he said, "We got to change the name." "Oh, no, 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 no. Mary is the name of my mother, and I couldn't change the name." "Well," he said, "here's an idea. If things keep getting bad, here's what I want you to do. I want you to name the hotel the Three Bells Hotel. And then I want you to hang two bells on the porch." So she kept it as Mary's, but it still not pulled in people. So finally she called it the Three Bells Hotel, and she put two bells on the outside of the hotel. And more people kept flocking into the hotel to tell her how stupid she was that there were two bells when it was the Three Bell Hotel, and they saw how nice it was inside, and what used to be Mary's Hotel became very, very prosperous. Isn't it true that I love that story? There's also the story of about relationships and people being kind. A relationship of a true story of a man named Morris Silverman. Morris Silverman was a Jew who came from Europe to the United States. And when he was in his home country, he was a shamus, a caretaker of a synagogue, and that's how he earned his living. So he figured, when I get to the United States, I'll be a shamus in a synagogue, and that's how I'll earn my living. Well, he came over and he found a synagogue, and he went, and in his broken English, he said, I want to be a shamus. I want to be a caretaker for the synagogue, because that's what I did in my home country. And the rabbi said, "Fine, but you also have to do some reading and writing, because that's very important." And he said, "Well, I don't know how to read, and I don't know how to write." So the rabbi said, "Well, if you can't read or write, then you can't have the job." So Morris went on, and he decided, "Well, I can't be a shamus in a synagogue, so what I'll do is I'll try and sell things on the street." So he started selling things on the street, and he got money selling things on the street, and then he made more money. And so after he made more money selling things on the street, he made more money. And then all of a sudden he started becoming very, very rich. He had all this wealth, and he decided he wanted to finally get a a business going, a big business going, and he had plenty of wealth, but he needed a loan, and so he had gone to Rockefeller, and he asked one of the Rockefellers if he could get a loan to do this business, and he showed him what he had done, and the guy said, fine. So, finally the day came in to do to get the loan, and Rockefeller said to Morris, okay, now, here's the loan money, but you got to sign this piece of paper. And Morris said, I don't know how to read, and I don't know how to write. And Rockefeller looked at him and thought, this guy's made a fortune, and he can't read or write. And he thought to himself, my gosh, what would you have become had you been able to read or write? And Morris Silverman said, I would have been a caretaker in a synagogue. Many I know don't see their own talents, but only see their faults. This is one of my favorite stories. Once upon a time, there was a water. Of course, all my stories are favorite stories. You probably heard me say that five times already today. Once upon a time, there was a water carrier in Africa, and he used to take a pole, and he'd put a bucket on one end, a bucket on the other, and he'd go down to the well, and he'd fill up the buckets, and then he'd carry them back to the village, and he'd put them in this common pot, and he'd go back and fill them up, put them in the common pot, fill them up, put them in the common pot. Do that all day long. That was the way he worked. And what was strange was that when he emptied the buckets, when he'd get to the place where he had to empty the buckets, one bucket always had much more water than the other bucket. And he knew why. But one day, the bucket that had a crack in it said to the water carrier, how come you still use me when you know I have a crack in me? And Morris said, well, I want to show you something. He filled up the water and he started walking along. As he walked along, he saw a little pool on the ground, and the pool was where birds came and they got their drink and then they would go away. And Morris said, without you, the pool wouldn't be there. Then he walked along a little bit later and he said, see all those flowers along there? And the water bucket said, yes. He said, without the crack in your water bucket, none of those would be watered and none of those would exist. So Morris said, what you consider to be a fault, I consider to be a virtue. Because of the crack in your bucket, we have the pond and we have the flowers, and the people in the village love the pond and love the flowers. How true it is that we don't recognize what we have or how we're used. There was an apple tree once that used to look at the stars at night and wish that it could be like the stars at night. And it just said, I want to be stars at night. And it grew and it grew and it grew, and then it started producing the beautiful flowers, you know, that apple trees produce, and all the people enjoyed the scent of the flowers, and then it started bearing fruit, and the people enjoyed the fruit, and the apple tree still looked up at the sky and wanted to be the stars, wanted to be the stars. So one time the apple tree said, God, how come I can't be stars? And God said, well, look. And he knocked an apple off the tree, and the apple tree and the apple split in half. One end had the stem, and the other end had the other half. And when you looked at the apple inside, it was shaped like a star. Once upon a time, there was a man who, at the fair who used to fill balloons with helium and let them go. Red balloons, white balloons, green balloons, yellow balloons. And one day a little African-American boy came up to him and said, sir, will a black balloon fly? And the man with the balloon says, it's not the color that matters, it's what inside that matters. And he filled up a black balloon, and it flew like the rest of them. And the little boy looked and looked and thought, that's great. That's great. This whole section of the Sermon on the Mount reminds me of a Turkish proverb that goes, 1,000 friends are too little, and one enemy is too many. The next section of this thing is called Dogs and Pigs. Isn't that a great title? Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine, or they will trample them underfoot and turn and maul you. Dogs and pigs. Now, that's kind of interesting because the Jews would call Gentiles dogs and pigs at the time of Jesus. But that's not what it refers to here. What it refers to here is those who don't listen. Those are the dogs and pigs. And I think that we have to realize that sometimes people misuse the power of the word. And it's to be used with wisdom, not just randomly. There's a story about there's a story about a master who knew a sacred mantra. And the mantra was just very, very powerful words that could do almost anything. And there were these disciples who weren't very good disciples who kept saying to the master, teach us the mantra, teach us the mantra, teach us the mantra. And the master said, you're not wise enough to learn the mantra. Teach us the mantra, teach us the mantra. This went on for years. And finally, in desperation, the master, though he shouldn't have done it, gave the words of the mantra to these disciples. And so these disciples felt really good because now they had the power of the word. The power of the word. They would use it. So one day they were walking together and they saw on the side of the road a number of bones. And one of the guys said, well now, here's what we should do. Let's use our mantra over these bones and see what happens. So they said the sacred words over the bones, and the bones came to life, and it turned out to be a pack of wolves, and the men were consumed by the pack of wolves. Power without wisdom is deadly. The next part is our attitude towards the Heavenly Father. I'm not going to read it all. It's too long. But it's a section on prayer. And I think it's significant that the section on prayer is put between sections on relationships, because I think prayer has a lot to do with our relationships and can help relationships grow, or when not used, can hurt. Tony DeMello, who I mentioned the other day, is one of my favorite writers, was an Indian Jesuit And he put down, he wrote the following: when the eye is unobstructed, the result is seen. When the ear is unobstructed, the result is hearing. When the palate is unobstructed, the result is tasting. When the mind is unobstructed, the result is wisdom and happiness. If you could get rid of illusion, you would be happy. If you could get rid of illusion, you would be happy. God wants us to build our world up to Him in prayer. And I'm going to read this story. Usually I tell stories, but this one I'm reading. It's by someone you know, Dick Gregory. You know Dick Gregory? Dick Gregory tells the story of himself praying on a cold day when his mother calls him to come in. Dick says, "See what I mean, God? There she goes already, and I'm not even cold. I'm all wrapped up in you." His mother asked Dick what was wrong, and Dick said that she would not understand. "Try me," she replies. So Dick talked about going away alone so no one would laugh at him when he prayed. He then went on, "Mama, if I tell you something, would you laugh at me? Would you say I'm crazy? Would you say I was lying, Mama?" "Of course not," she replied. "I heard him talk to me," Dick said. She put her arms around him and agreed that God does talk to people. She then said to Dick, "Do me a favor, will you?" Dick said, "Yes, Mama." "Next time you talk to him, ask him to send your dad home." There's a funny story about someone who wants to pray the wrong way. Boy asked his mom for a bike. He said, "You've been rotten. You can't have a bike. You get better, I'll give you a bike. You've been rotten." "I haven't been rotten. You've been rotten." He said, "So I'm going to go write God a letter." So Dick, the guy went in and he wrote God a letter. "Dear God, I've been very, very good, and would you please give me a bike?" And he realized, "Oh no, this won't work." He tore it up. Then he wrote another one. "Well, God, I've made some mistakes, but I've been generally good. Would you give me a bike?" He thought, "No, that's not going to work." He tore it up. So then he wrote, "God, I haven't been very good, but I'll be better, and could you give me a bike?" He wasn't very happy with that one either, so he tore it up. Then he realized that there was a Catholic church not too far away. So he walked down to the church, and he went up, and if you know Catholic churches, oftentimes they have a section where Mary is. And he found this small statue of Mary in the church. And he stole it, and he brought it back to his room. He sat down, and he wrote a letter. "God, I got your mother. Give me a bike or else." Well, the last part here, we got about 10 minutes. 10 minutes is the golden rule. And everything you do to others as you would have them do to you, for this is the law and the prophets. All kinds of stories illustrate the golden rule. There's a quote here, though, from Sister Joan Chittister that I really like. "Try saying this silently to everyone and everything you see for 30 days and see what happens to your soul." Here's what she says to say: "I wish you happiness now and whatever will bring you happiness to you in the future. If we set it to the sky, we would have to stop polluting. If we set it when we see the ponds and lakes and streams, we would have to stop using them as garbage dumps and sewers. If we set it to small children, we would have to stop abusing them, even in the name of training. If we set it to people, we would have to stop stoking the fires of enmity all around us. Beauty and human warmth would take root in us like a clear, hot June day. We would change. I like that prayer. They say, try it and maybe you will be as kind as Paderewski in the following story. I had a Paderewski story the other day. This may be the third Paderewski story, in fact. But Mrs. Garbowski, who was Polish-American, heard that Paderewski was coming to America, to her town, and was going to give a concert. She called all her Polish friends, and she said, Paderewski's coming, let's get tickets. So they bought tickets. And she went down to the concert hall about an hour before the concert, and she had her little boy with her, and they talked to all these Polish friends. Paderewski, the great Polish musician's going to be here. Paderewski, the great Polish musician's going to be here. She was so happy. And then it was time to get back to her seat because it was just about time to open up the curtain. And so she went back to her seat and she put her hand down to touch Johnny and he wasn't there. She said, I don't have to worry about Johnny. There's all these Polish Americans here. They'll take care of him. So the curtain opened up, and there at the piano was Johnny. And Johnny was going, dun, 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 dun. And while he was playing Twinkle Twinkle on the piano, the only song he knew, out came Paderewski. And Paderewski went, and he sat down next to Johnny as Johnny was doing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And Paderewski played chords to Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And for the first time in history, everyone heard the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star concerto. And when it was all over, Paderewski took the little boy, went to the front of the stage, and they both. Isn't that a neat story? And it's true. I like true stories. Next one's true also. Moses Mendelssohn was a Jewish philosopher. And he had a hunched back. And he realized he wasn't very good looking. And he was staying with friends, and one of the friends had a daughter. And he really liked the daughter. So he asked the father, do you think your daughter would ever consider marrying me? And the father said, Mendelssohn, you're so off base. She can't even look at you, let alone marry you. So he says, well, may I talk to your daughter? He said, yeah, you may talk to my daughter. So he went up to where the daughter was, and the daughter didn't look at him. And they started talking about different things, and somehow marriage came up, and Mendelssohn said, do you believe that marriages are made in heaven? And she said, yes, I do. And he said, do you know that right before you're born, you get a vision from God, and it shows you who you're going to marry? She said, no, I never heard that. He says, yes. And when I had my vision of who God was, and who my wife was going to be, I saw this woman who was beautiful, but had a terrible, terrible hunched back. And I said to God, it would be terrible for a woman to have a hunched back. Give it to me. And so he did. Paderewski ended up marrying that woman, and they had a very very successful marriage. There was another story on kind of the golden rule. Got two stories to go, this one and the next one. There was a poor Irish farmer, and he didn't have much of anything, and a notice went out from the king, who didn't have any heirs. And the king said, "I am looking for someone to be my heir." The poor Irish farmer, "I do pretty well with that." And the king wrote, "The man must have love of God and love of his fellow man." And the poor farmer thought, "Well, I love God and I love my fellow man, so maybe I qualify." And then he thought, "But I can't go to the king like I am with these ragged clothes." So he worked and he worked and he worked, and he got some decent clothes. And he headed off towards the king's place. And when he headed off, he walked along, and then he saw this poor beggar by the side of the road. And this poor beggar said, "My clothes are awful. Can you help me?" And the Irish farmer thought, "Oh, gee, my clothes are so bad. Can you help me?" And the Irish farmer said, "Yes, I can help you." And he took off his clothes and gave the clothes to the poor guy who was lying on the ground. And he took the clothes from the poor guy on the ground and put them on himself, dirty and ratty as they were. And then he wondered, "Should I still go see the king? No, I might as well, like this far." So he walked a day or two more, and he finally got to the king's house. And when he got to the king's house, he thought, "He's not going to let me in." But they let him in. And when he walked in to see the king, he looked at the king, and the king was the poor beggar that had been lying by the side of the road, and he became the successor. Love of God and love of neighbor. And then finally, a true story from Japan, and we're just on time. Tetsugen was a Japanese Zen Buddhist who lived many years ago. And he wanted to raise money to publish 7,000 copies of the sutras in Japanese, because at that time they only existed in Chinese. Now, for most of us, Chinese and Japanese look the same, but no, they're not the same at all. So he wanted to get 7,000 copies for the sutras. So he worked and he worked and he worked, and he gathered enough money so that he could print and get these 7,000 copies made. And on his way back to his hometown, he came through a place that had been devastated by a flood. And Tetsugen spent all the money he had helping the people recover. And then he started in again to try and find enough money for 7,000 copies of the thing. And he worked and he worked, and it took years this time to get the money. And then he started back to his hometown, and he came through a place that had been hit by a plague. And he gave all the money to the people to get food. And then he worked and he worked and he worked, and it took him 20 years to get the money. 20 years. And then the Japanese version of the sutras was published, 7,000 copies. And the first edition of the sutras is on display at the Obaku Monastery in Japan. And when moms and dads bring their kids to see the first edition of the sutras, they usually tell them, "This is really the third edition. The first two were much more important." Mm. Thank you.